We started a series at the beginning of the year in Genesis called The Beginning of Redemption. And Genesis is the beginning of God's story, and God's story is ultimately about redemption, about God redeeming us, broken sinners, back to himself in relationship. Today, in chapter 18 and 19, we're going to see some interesting things, but really we're going to see two things. We're going to see God's judgment and God's mercy. God is both. And many times we want to emphasize one or the other. There's been times in human history where judgment is all that the message is, right? That this is hellfire and brimstone and nothing else. Right? There's no grace, there's no mercy, there's no love. And probably today, most churches are probably more on the side of grace and mercy and love and less on the side of judgment, right? But God has revealed himself to be both. He is a God of justice and judgment, but he is also a God who forgives and is merciful and is gracious. And in today's story, Abraham is going to wrestle with the question of God's justice and his mercy. He's going to seek for God. He's going to seek mercy from God for his nephew, for Lot, because he doesn't want him to experience God's judgment. And so we prayed this morning to have a heart for the lost. And we're going to see Abraham exhibit that. As we see, this is kind of heavy text, I'm going to be honest, if we really soak it in. When we really see that God will judge sin, it should move us to have a heart for those who are still under judgment, those who do not have a relationship with him. In this passage, we're also going to see God's mercy on Lot. Lot didn't deserve it. We're going to see that multiple times throughout this. Lot doesn't deserve it, but he is shown mercy because of his connection to the righteous one, Abraham, right? I got to thinking about this. You know, we live in a small town. I don't know if you know this. Anybody know this? Yes. Right? And there's often complaints about people getting preferential treatment or getting worse treatment. And typically, it's related to what in our small town? It's related to your last name, right? For better, for worse, there's good and bad about that. But who you are or who you are connected to sometimes leads to preferential treatment. And you're all going, ooh, not us, not us. Yeah, it's true. It's okay. Sometimes, my dad was a preacher. My dad was a preacher here. And people are nicer to me because I am a preacher, right? People treat me differently than they do the average person because they think that they might get something from that, okay? So I've been on the positive side of this, but other people, if you have certain last names, and you may have one of those last names, you've maybe received some negative treatment because of that, right? And what's the point of that? We've turned that kind of wicked in ways, but the point of it is the point of this story. Who we are connected to is how we get treated, right? And Lot is connected to Abraham. And though Lot doesn't deserve mercy, doesn't deserve forgiveness, he is going to get it, right? You and I don't deserve God's grace. We don't deserve Jesus dying on the cross for us. But he gives it to us anyway. Why? Because we are in Christ. We've been given a new name. We are connected to Jesus. You and I don't deserve it, but we have a connection to God, and that is how we can experience mercy, not judgment. So let's read. We got to hustle this morning. This is Genesis 18, starting in verse 16. It says, then the men, these are the two angels that met with Abraham last week at the tent. It says, then the two men set out from there, and they looked down toward Sodom. And Abraham went with them to set them on their way. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I have chosen him, that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised him. Now, as we left the story last week, God has visited Abraham and Sarah. Remember, he's come as in the form of three men, the God and then two angels. And they come and they have this meal. Remember, there's the whole conversation with Sarah, and they're both laughing at God's news that they're going to have a kid. They're very old, right? But God tells them that they're going to have a kid within the year, and they're going to name him Isaac, meaning he laughs. And though they laughed at God's plan, this is what is going to happen. And so these men are leaving Abram's tent at the Oaks of Mamre, and God begins to reveal more of his plan to Abraham. As they walk and talk, God's telling him about what's going to happen. He doesn't withhold from him information, and he begins to talk about a place that Abram knows and that Abram went away from, a place called Sodom and Gomorrah. And he begins to think about his nephew Lot, who went towards Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, there's a truth here that we often maybe just skip by. There's a reality here that maybe we just assume most weeks, but we need to stop and think about it for a second. God has made himself known to us. God has not remained hidden. We don't have to wonder about who God is. God has made himself known in many ways through creation and through his word. We don't have to question, well, I just don't know if God's like that. No, we know who God is. God has made himself known. He didn't have to, but he did. He made himself known, and he's making himself known right here to Abraham. God is a God who knows all things, sees all things, is infinite, has no limits, and he looks at us as limited creatures who don't see all things, and we only see and know in parts. And God still chooses to make himself known to us. Do we know him fully? No, right? But we know enough about him to know who he is. And so God makes himself known here to Abraham, and it's interesting what he says. He's talking about how I've chosen him and that he would command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice. See, God has given knowledge of who he is to Abraham so that what? So that Abraham would give it to his family. So that there would be this lineage of people who walk in God's ways. Right? You and I are called to do the same. Parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, community figures, coaches. This is what we are called to do with our influence. This is what we are called to do with our authority, with our place in our community. We are called to teach the next generation the ways of the Lord, to raise them up to walk with God. This is our job to be about. Now, God makes himself known to Abraham here, but he doesn't just make the good news known. He also gives him the bad news. And look at it, verse 20. Verse 20. It says, then the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me. And if not, I will know. So God is not just making the good news known to Abraham. He's given him some of the bad news. And the bad news is God is about to bring his judgment against these evil cities. Sodom, Gomorrah, there's others in this plain, right? Now, God says it here like an investigator, that he has come down to figure out. He's gotten this report. He's heard that there's some bad things going on here, and he's coming down to confirm the truth. I've heard about how immense their sin is, and now I'm here to verify it with my own eyes. So this doesn't mean, don't hear this as God doesn't know everything, right? Don't hear this as if God is like somehow lacking knowledge. It's his way of communicating that any judgment that God brings is based on facts. It's based on reality. It's not based on hearsay. This is a fair judgment that God's about to bring. Why? Because he's seen it with his own eyes. Because he's confirmed it with two witnesses. And so he's going to see this sin. And he's going to see that they do deserve judgment. Now, Abraham hears this. And his first thought, my nephew, Lot. Oh no. Do you remember the story? It wasn't that long ago. They both are deciding where they're going to settle. They've got too much stuff. They can't stay together. And Lot goes towards Sodom, towards the direction of Sodom. Abraham went the other way, right? And Abraham knows that Lot has moved closer and closer and closer to Sodom. This is not good. So what does Abraham do? Out of love, out of compassion, he intercedes for him. Look at verse 22. Here's what it says. And so the men turned from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood still before the Lord. And Abraham drew near and said, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away that place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to put the righteous to death with the wicked so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be that from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just?" And the Lord said, "If I find it at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake." And so God is in this conversation with Abraham. And really, up till this point in recorded biblical history, humanity doesn't speak to God. God speaks to humanity. We don't initiate a conversation with God. This is one of the very first times that a human initiates a conversation with God. And Abraham gets bold enough to speak to God, to begin to ask a question. And he asks a question of God's character. He asks a question of God's character. And he asks this key question: "God, will you destroy the righteous along with the wicked?" In essence, he's asking God, "Are you going to be fair?" How many of you have kids that shout, "That's not fair," right? How many of you, it's like we're born with a sense as little kids, all the way up till now, right? That's not fair. And Abraham's looking at this situation thinking, man, if Lot's there and maybe his family's there, okay, maybe Lot's influenced some people and maybe there's 50 righteous people here. That's not fair for them to be destroyed along with the wicked. That's not fair. It doesn't seem right that God would destroy a righteous person because of what an unrighteous person has done. And so Abraham asked the Lord, "Okay, God, if you could find 50, if there's 50, would you consider sparing the city and not destroying it?" Now, God agrees. Right? God hears his request and God is moved and God agrees. "If there is 50 righteous people, then I will show mercy to the whole place." Now think about that. Right? This is not just, if there's 50 righteous people, I will spare them and I will judge the rest. What does he say? "I will save the many because of the few. I will save the many unrighteous because of the few righteous ones that are there." God is going to be just, and God is going to be merciful. It's one thing to judge the wicked, save the righteous. It's a whole other thing to save the unrighteous because of the righteous. Now, I hope you see what this is foreshadowing. I hope you see where this is headed, right? That you and I, the only way we can experience mercy, the only way you and I can be saved, is because God found one who was righteous. And that one who was righteous, Jesus Christ, died on the cross in our place so that the many who are unrighteous can be saved. That's called God's mercy, that we don't get what we do deserve. And Abraham is thinking about it. He's thinking about the city and God's judgment. He's trying to save his nephew Lot, and he goes, "You know what? 50's too high. 50's too many. I've heard about Sodom. I've heard about Gomorrah. I'm not sure that 50 is going to be enough." And we won't read it. But Abraham begins to persistently intercede, and he begins to take the number down from 50, and he goes, "Okay, God, what about 45? Right? He begins to bargain with the Lord. "Hey, what if there's 45? Would you do it for 45? Right? And the Lord's like, "Yeah, I'd do it for 45. Okay, but, and then he goes, I'm not sure there's 45, right? So he goes to 40. Okay, what if there's 40? Would you do it for 40? Yeah, I'll do it for 40. And he thinks again, and he goes, I've heard about some of the things going on there. There's probably not 40. Okay, God, would you do it for 30, right? And he's getting bold here because he's coming to the Lord again and again and again, and he goes from 40 to 30 to 20 to 10, and he's hopeful. He's hopeful that maybe 10 will do it. Maybe Lot, his wife, maybe he's had some kids and some son-in-laws, and maybe they've got some kids, and maybe there's 10 who are righteous. He's hopeful. He doesn't know, but he's hopeful. God, will you show mercy because of 10 righteous ones? And God agrees, okay? God agrees. Now we see what happens. God sends the angels to Sodom to figure out what's going on. Abraham goes back to his tent and he waits. He waits to hear. Let's read it, verse 19, 1 through 11. It says, the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth and said, my lords, please turn aside to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way. And they said, no, we will spend the night in the town square. But he pressed them strongly, and so they turned aside to him and entered his house. And he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Pretty tame so far. It's about to not be tame. Verse 4. But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them. And Lot went out to the men at the entrance, shut the door after him, and said, I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof. But they said, stand back. And they said, this fellow came to sojourn, and he has become the judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them. And they pressed hard against the man Lot and drew near to break the door down. But the men, the angels, reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out, groping for the door. So the two angels show up to Sodom in a very similar way to that they showed up at the tent of Abraham, right? And Abraham was sitting outside. Lot is sitting there at the gate. And this means that he has likely become a kind of a respected figure in Sodom, right? This is where the men, the elders of the community would sit. They would hear cases. This is not like Boots Coffee, like that kind of respect, right? But this is like, or whatever it's called now. Sorry, RIP Boots, right? Little Boots. But these men would sit outside the gate, and Lot has become one of them, which signals to us, okay, maybe Lot has some influence here. And so we don't know yet, has he influenced them, or have they influenced him, right? That's always the question, right? Is Lot going to be an influence over them and make them righteous? Or is their unrighteousness going to influence him? And so these men, Lot welcomes them into his home, and they say, no, we're just going to stay inside the city for the night. And Lot knows this is not good. You can't do that. That's not going to be good. This is going to lead to danger and torment for you. And so he urges them. He takes them in. He feeds them. He gives them a place to stay. But before they could even go to sleep, the sin of Sodom rears its ugly and detestable head. And it makes it clear here that it's all the people. Like this is the moment where the witnesses are going to see, are there 10 righteous? And it says that from the whole city, young and old, they surrounded Lot's house. And they demanded that Lot give them those men. And I'm not going to go into details or be whatever here. They're not inviting them to a dinner and welcoming party, okay? Right? They have evil intentions with these men, right? This is utterly evil and wicked. And Lot knew this. Lot knew that this would happen. He knew the kind of place that he was in. He knew the place that he had tied himself to, that he had slowly drifted from outside the city to inside the city to now being a respected member of this city. Why? Because it had made him rich. It had made him wealthy. He had cozied up with this. He had become okay with this. He knew what was going to go on. He had cozied up with these sinful men, and now he has put himself in this predicament. And so he goes out to try to speak to this crowd who has very evil intentions. He calls them brothers, right? He's identifying with them, saying, guys, brothers, don't act so wickedly. He's trying to tell them, right, what you're trying to do is wrong, right? I don't know if you've ever tried to tell an angry mob that they're wrong, but it doesn't go well here either. These men have no moral conscience. They reject that what they're doing is even evil. They don't see any wrong in it, and they begin to accuse who? Lot. You're the evil one for saying that we're evil, right? They turn it around. The modern term is gaslighting, right? That they say, we're not the ones in the wrong here. You're wrong because you're a stranger, and now you're trying to tell us what's right and wrong? Who are you to be judge over us? Now, this doesn't help because they turn hostile, and they threaten to do even worse than what they were going to do to these men. They threaten it against Lot. They threaten violence. And so Lot tries an unbelievable tactic, and it's terrible. It's wicked. He offers instead to this unruly mob to give his own two daughters who have been under his roof to this crowd, right? What a wicked thought. What a terrible place Lot has put himself in. But this is what happens when we cozy up to sin. We get put in between a rock and a hard place. Right? We get put in difficult, no-win situations. And sometimes we even think more sin is the way out of my sin, right? This is where Lot is. How terrible of a place he's in. And things are progressing and getting more violent and more dangerous. And God steps in. The angels grab Lot. They bring him inside. They lock the door. And the angels strike the mob with blindness. They've already been spiritually blind. We've seen that. They don't think there's anything wrong with what they're doing. But now they're physically blind. And it forces them to grope around and find their way somewhere else. You see, these two angels, these investigators, came to see, is it as bad as we hear? And they have confirmed with their own two eyes, there are not at least 10 righteous people in this city. And God's judgment is going to come. No one in here is righteous. No, not one. Except, read verse 12. It says, then the men said to Lot, these are the angels, have you anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons, daughters, or anyone you have in the city, bring them out of the place. For we are about to destroy this place because the outcry against its people has become great before the Lord. And the Lord has sent us to destroy it. And so Lot went out and said to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters, up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city. But he seemed to his sons-in-law to be just jesting, joking. And as morning dawned, the angel urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city. But he lingered. And so the men, the angels, seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him. And they brought him out and set him outside the city. And as they brought him out, one said, escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away. And Lot said to them, oh, no, my lords. Behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. You've shown me great kindness in saving my life. But I cannot escape to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die. Behold, this city is near enough to flee to, and it's a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved. And he said to him, "Behold, I grant you this favor, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Escape there quickly, for I can do nothing until you have arrived there." Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar, which means little. So, the judgment is clear, right? The story is very clear up to this point. Sin has broken out in a way that God has to judge. And judgment is going to come very soon. And the angels begin to warn Lot of this, right? Think about this. The fact that they know beforehand this is coming. If you knew beforehand a tornado is coming to your house, you would leave, right? If you knew beforehand there's a tsunami coming, you would do whatever it took to get out of the way, right? If you have knowledge of death before it comes, then you flee, right? This is God's mercy to Lot, that he is given news that there is a judgment coming, and if you do not run to the Savior, you will not be saved. He needs to get his family out of this fertile plain into the mountains, far away, so that you don't experience the judgment of God. And so what does he do? He goes to his sons-in-law, right? These poor guys. They're probably from Sodom, because that's where he's lived, right? And he tells them, he shares the truth with them. There's a God, and he's bringing his judgment on us for our sin. We've got to get out of here in order to be saved. And what do? They laugh him off. They say, "There's no God. There's no judgment coming. We're not accountable. That's not going to happen. Like, we've got time." Whatever the excuse is, we've all heard it, right? We've been laughed at for saying that there is a judgment to come, that we will stand before our Maker and be accountable for the sin and the way that we have lived. We've been laughed at for saying that, and Lot is laughed at. They thought it was funny. They refused to take it serious, and they refused to leave. Not only that, as the sun comes up, Lot has, what does the text say? He has lingered. Lot has lingered. What does that mean? It means that he has stuck around. I don't really know all the reasons why. I think we can guess a few. Maybe he didn't want to leave his stuff. He'd become rich and wealthy. He's a prominent man in this place. Maybe he began to doubt. Maybe there's not, did I dream all this? There's not really a judgment coming. Maybe he was fearful for the mountains, to leave everything that he had and to go with his daughters and his wife and start over with nothing. So he contemplated staying, even though he knew judgment was coming. He lingered. He's gotten so cozy and comfortable here in this place that he lingers. And he is even, it sounds like, going to stay. He's not even going to save his wife. He's not even going to save his daughters. He is a pitiful example of a man, right? He is not stepping in between them and rescuing them from danger. But God wouldn't allow it. Do you see what it says? When he lingers, what does it say? The men, the angels, seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him, and brought him out and set him outside the city. Lot didn't leave. God rescued him. God took him from where he was, cozy and comfortable in this city of sin, and God literally, physically brought him out of the city because Lot wanted nothing to do with it. God in his mercy. What did Lot deserve at this point? He deserved to die, and God showed him mercy. And they tell Lot, "Go to the mountains, flee, don't go," and Lot even still lingers. He bargains to go to this little city instead of going all the way to the mountains, this other place that he probably had been before, little Zoar. And God agrees. God has mercifully provided this way of escape for Lot, for his wife, and for his two daughters, even though they don't deserve it. Why? It's because of his connection to Abraham. And let's read what happens. Verse 23. It says, "The sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar, and the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew these cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. And Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley. And he looked, and behold, the smoke of the land went up like the smoke of a furnace. So it was that when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham. And he sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had lived. As the sun is coming up, Lot is arriving at this little town, Zoar, and God pours out his judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah and these other cities there. It's complete and utter destruction. Nothing's left on the ground that grows. And Lot's wife, who's probably from Sodom too, what does she do? Even though she's been set free, even though she's been rescued, where does her eyes turn back to? It's not that she looked to see what was happening. It's that she looked longing to go back. She wanted to be back there instead of set free and saved. She's supposed to keep looking forward to the way of God's salvation, but instead she's looking back to her old life, to what was comfortable, to what she had cozied up to. And God poured out his judgment on even her. And the story then shifts to Abraham's perspective. He's in the tents of Mamre. He's a long ways away. He's a couple days journey away. And what does he see? He doesn't know all that's happened. What does Abraham see? He sees smoke. He sees fire. He sees evidence that God's judgment has been poured out. And it says that God remembered Abraham. When we read the story of the flood, and Noah has been on the ark, and he's been on the ark for a lot of days, and everything's been covered with water, it says God remembered Noah. And here, God remembers who? He doesn't remember Lot. He doesn't remember Lot's wife or Lot's daughters. He remembers who? Abraham, the picture of the righteous one. And he sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow. You see, the point of this whole story is this. There is a God of judgment, but the God of judgment has made a way for us to receive mercy. And the way we can receive mercy is by who we are connected to. And if Lot wasn't connected to Abraham, he would not have been saved. And if you today are not connected to by a relationship with Jesus Christ, then you will not be saved. Do you hear me? There is a judgment that is coming, and you may laugh, and you may say, I have time, and you may say, I'll deal with that when I'm older. You may say, surely God's just going to save all in the end, right? Whatever your excuse may be, there is a judgment that is coming on each one of us because we are sinners who have rebelled against the word of God. God is just, and he will bring judgment against sin. God is patient. He will not always, he will not overlook sin forever. But God is merciful, and he made a way through faith for us to receive mercy, not judgment. And it seems so obvious. You read this story and you go, Lot's wife, what are you doing? Just do what the angel said, you'll be saved. Right? Lot's sons-in-law. Like, just do what the man says and you'll be saved. Like, this is so obvious to look at from the outside. But it's true today. It's so obvious. Do you want to live with God forever? In a perfect place where everything is meant to be the way it is? Or do you want to experience death forever? It seems so obvious to us. And yet still some go, you know what, I'm comfortable here. This is cozy. I've gotten used to this lifestyle, right? So blinded by our own sin that we can't even see how great of a salvation that God has offered in Jesus. There's so much here for us to learn about how we should pray for our friends and family who are lost. Maybe how we as individuals need to respond to this message. But I hope today, if nothing else, that you would see how great our God is, that he would provide us with a way of escape. Let me pray. God, I thank you for this morning, and though this text is heavy and hard, and the thinking about and pondering judgment and death and mercy is heavy, God, I pray that we would feel that. We would feel the weight of our rejection of you. We would feel the weight of our wanting to do our own thing, not what you have said, the creator of the universe, God. God, in that we would no longer cozy up to sin, move towards it closer and closer, that we would begin to move away. We would move towards you, to the way of escape that you've provided in Jesus. And we would stay there. We wouldn't look back. We wouldn't go back, but we would continue keeping our eyes on the author and the perfecter of our faith, Jesus, God. God, we thank you that there is mercy. There is salvation. I'm not standing up here today just proclaiming the bad news. That's part of it, God, but there is good news that we can be saved. We can be set free from our sin, from the punishment that we rightfully deserve. And so I pray for anyone in the room who's still in their sin, who's still sitting at the gate of Sodom, lingering, God, I pray, God, that you would grab them and you would pull them outside of the city and you would send them on the way to the mount where your son died on the cross for us, God. God, I pray that you would save those who are lost, God. We love you. We pray all this in your son's name. Amen.